You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to Aryan Britannia. Today's date is Monday, the 25th of February, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAryan.com. Well, we're experiencing some beautiful weather at the moment, not really used to having Februarys this warm. Beautiful springtime, let's hope that it continues and we don't suddenly get a cold spell. And we've actually got lots of good news today as well to be talking about for a change. It always makes for a very pleasant change when you look through the news and you find things to talk about which are positive. We had Tommy Robinson's demonstration at the weekend that showed the BBC and Hope Not Hate as the liars and the manufacturers of fake news that they are. We've also got a white man who won a case against the police for anti-white discrimination because the police were giving the jobs all to blacks and non-whites, even though he was more qualified than them, and he won his case. And I've also finished watching a speech, actually. I started watching it last night. A speech from Paul Golding from Britain First, an absolutely fantastic speech. Really, really good. He gave this speech at Paul in Dorset, I believe. They were protesting against Sajid Javid's lackluster response to these dinghies, which keep washing up on our shores, filled with invaders. And they must have had a meeting afterwards, and his elections supervisor was there. Dr. George Whale, whom I have met. He's a good man. And the fact that he's involved in Britain First says that they're going in the right direction, I think. And this speech that Paul Golding gave, it very much reminded me of Richard Edmonds. A lot of the language he was using was the same language that Richard Edmonds uses, talking about the traitors, the traitor politicians, how every single one of them is a traitor. Some of them are slightly better than others. Some of them, like Jacob Rees-Mogg, are good at arguing. Boris Johnson pointed out that Muslim females look like they're wearing black bags on their heads, or they look like letterboxes. But that's not enough. It's not enough just to occasionally say the right thing. We need people that are speaking up for the white British people. And Paul certainly seems to be doing that. Britain First wish to stop all immigration, not to slow it down a little bit or have a points-based system like UKIP. Britain First say they want to stop all immigration. And the reason for this is because if we don't, within 20 years, we'll be a minority in our own country. And the language that Paul was using included words like genocide. He didn't actually say white genocide, but he was talking about this is a genocide. We are being replaced. He talked about the Great Replacement. Very, very good. I mean, really, it was an ethno-nationalist speech. Definitely an ethno-nationalist speech. And only one bit that I would quibble with is when he talked about needing the spirit of Winston Churchill. But I guess you can't win them all, and the majority of people in Britain do see Winston Churchill as a hero. They don't realise that actually Churchill prosecuted an absolutely senseless war against a country that was doing no harm to anyone, but that in actual fact was doing a lot of good, that had got rid of the bankers, got rid of usury, got rid of pornography, fought against Marxism, saved Europe from the Red Army, saved Europe from Bolshevism, or saved Western Europe by going into Russia and almost succeeded in snuffing out communism entirely. And Winston Churchill fought against that force for good. And in doing so, he destroyed half of Europe, was responsible for the rape of millions of German and French women when they supposedly liberated France, a peaceful country that was engaged in an armistice with Germany at the time, and lost us the British Empire. He lost us the British Empire. And because of that, because of the war that we fought against Germany and us losing the war, basically, the white race, the Europeans, losing that war, straight after it, we had the United Nations, we had the start of the European Union, the Windrush appeared on our shores, and the invasion of Europe by the Third World started in earnest. And it all happened after that war. And it was all Churchill bears much of the responsibility for that. The people in Britain didn't want to go to war. Nobody wanted to go to war. That's a lie that we're told today, that everybody wanted to go to war. They didn't. And after the war, Churchill wasn't even voted in as Prime Minister. The British people showed their disgust at what he had done by refusing to vote for him. But the majority of people in Britain do think that Churchill was a hero. So perhaps it is pragmatic for Paul Golding to idolise Churchill and use the imagery of Churchill in trying to appeal to the people. I don't know how many people in Britain have really woken up to the lies about World War II, but at a guess, I would say that it is still a minority. But I was just so pleased to see that this is the direction that Britain First are heading in. It was much better than, I mean, I like Gerard Batten. I really do like Gerard Batten. But Britain First are going in a much better direction. And Paul Golding was a much better speaker than Gerard Batten. It was a real shame that he didn't have lots of people cheering and clapping parts of the speech that he gave, because it really was worth giving him some applause. I mean, this was a passionate speech. And I really haven't heard Paul speak very much before. In a lot of the videos, it's always been Jada Franson, and he's sort of taken a step back. But he showed that he really does know what he's talking about. And he said to actually go into the reasons for the immigration, that would take a three-hour speech. Now, I would really like to hear that. I would really like to hear what he sees as the reasons for it, and who's behind it as well. Because don't forget, most of the people that have called for immigration have been Jewish. So I'd like to see him tackle that one, because they're not an anti-Semitic organization. Britain First have gone out in their Britain First battle truck around Golders Green in London, saying that they're going to be protecting the Jews, and the Jews need protecting from Muslims. And maybe that's true to a certain extent. You do hear of violent attacks against Jews by Muslims, but that doesn't alter the fact that the majority of the people that are called for immigration and that push the immigration agenda are Jewish. Now, I'd really like to get a chance to interview Paul Golding, but it's very hard to actually get hold of him. If you sign up to their website, you just get emails telling you their latest bits of activism, and emails requesting donations. And to be honest, the emails requesting donations, they do wear a little bit thin. I think they should cut back on that. Jada Franson has left Britain First, and I'm not quite sure what she's going to be doing, but she's got her own website, and her emails that she sends out haven't actually been asking for money, which does make a nice change. Of course, we do all need money, but it just seems a little bit, a little bit materialistic. And almost as if it's one of these email con letters that you get that try to con people out of their money. It's like a sort of begging letter. And I don't think it really suits them to be doing that. Obviously, they do make funds. He's managed to fight off all these legal cases against him. And of course, he's been sent to prison for his beliefs as well. I mean, he's a courageous man. He's a brave man. He's been inside in prison. He's come back out fighting. They're still trying to silence him. He's still on restrictions. And they're doing the same nasty things to Jada Franson. She's not allowed to go back and live in her own home, which is in Northern Ireland. She's been told she's got to stay in England. She's either got to stay at a bail hostel or she's got to stay at a hotel when she's got her own house that she could be living in Northern Ireland. So there's this real persecution going on against Britain First at the moment. And on the strength of that, the speech that he gave, I would say we should all be supporting them. We really should be supporting them. This was, I mean, I cannot get over just how good a speech it was. And I would embed it at the Radio Aryan site, but it's not on YouTube. He's obviously thought ahead and set up his own website after being taken down by Facebook and Twitter and YouTube. So he set up his own site so that he can put his own videos on there. And I know Tommy Robinson has had problems with this as well. He started having sites pulled. And this is what we have to do now. We can't rely on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, that sort of thing. We've got to set up our own video sites, and we've got to help one another. And if you're involved in reporting on nationalist news, then give Britain First some space there and put a link to their website. I think I'm going to be doing that after seeing this speech. And as I mentioned, we also had this protest from Tommy Robinson at the weekend, which was fantastic, really. It looked like there was about 10,000 people there. Apparently there was no arrests. I think there were about 400 Antifa that were protesting, including Muslim females clad from head to toe in burqas, protesting there alongside the feminists of the Antifa. And it looked like he was having some problems with actually getting the film up on the screen at first. It was 2 hours late because they were having to still render it. And you would have thought that they would have thought ahead and had everything planned before the actual morning, just before it actually goes online. And as I'm recording this now, the final documentary still hasn't actually been uploaded. And that was one of the low points, really, when the documentary was being shown, was that you couldn't quite hear what John Sweeney from Panorama, what he was actually saying. You really do need some subtitles so that we can see, because he was obviously saying things that would have embarrassed him, but it's very hard to actually pick them out. And I don't know why he hadn't actually set up the subtitles by the time it was actually shown. But before it was shown, we did have speeches from Gerard Batten. Again, it was a good speech, but it wasn't really rousing. It wasn't really encouraging and inspiring. Not in the way that Paul Golding's speech was. But he's still good all the same. UKIP are going in a good direction. And the fact that they are supporting Tommy Robinson and are quite open about being associated with him, that's a really good thing. Now, he also had a Jew on there that was speaking, and of course, I don't approve of that. If you're going to have nationalism, then we need the Jews have their own nationalism. The Jews have their own nationalism. We don't need to have Jews claiming to be part of British nationalism. This guy was an Australian Jew, and he's a proud Zionist. Fair enough, he's a Jew. I would expect him to be a Zionist. I would expect him to support Zionism. I would expect him to support Jewish nationalism and having their own homeland. I don't have a problem with Jews having their own homeland. What I have a problem with is Jews' inordinate amount of power in everybody else's government. Jews in America, in APAC, telling the government what they want and the government doing it. And the same that we have over here in Britain, we have the Board of British Deputies, the Jewish Board of British Deputies, who got themselves into trouble just the other day by trying to interfere in the politics in in Hungary. In actual fact, the Hungarian Secretary of State sent back quite a strong-worded letter accusing them of being liars and accusing them of interfering in Hungarian politics. And of course, they will always come out with this claim of anti-Semitism if you criticise them in any way. And we can see the inordinate amount of power that the Jews have in the way that they go after Jeremy Corbyn, who most certainly is not a racist. He's certainly not an anti-Semite. All he's done is allowed people to criticise Israel. You won't hear people in Labour criticising Jews just for being Jews, and encouraging immigration and encouraging homosexuality and being behind usury. You certainly won't hear any of that in the Labour Party. All you will hear is criticism of Israeli Jews for the way that they treat Palestinians. So and the way that this is being portrayed, I mean, you would have thought they would have finished with it now. I mean, every time they go after Jeremy Corbyn, he goes on the television and he makes a speech about how we all need to stamp out anti-Semitism. There won't be any anti-Semitism in his party. It's the most dreadful thing on earth. I mean, he really sucks up to the Jews. And then the next day, there will just be more attacks saying that's not good enough. It's just not good enough. He's just not philo-Semitic enough for the Jews. And if the Jews don't approve, then the Labour Party can't possibly be allowed to win the next election. That's basically the subtext of the narrative. And if you think, well, Jews only make up 2% of the population, how come they have so much power that they can make this huge fuss and make or break the opposition in Britain? They have an inordinate amount of power, the same as they do in America. And some Jews will speak up about this. Some Jews will speak up about it. But this Jew that Tommy Robinson had on stage, he's not one of the ones to speak up about it. He's there to attack Muslims. And he made jokes about how, as he was going to have to go back to Australia, he was going to have to stop off in Muslim countries and he might be in danger there. He won't be in any danger in Muslim countries. He looks just like them. There's no difference between him and the Arabs. Just the little hat that he wears on his head. Saudi Arabia are allies with Israel. A lot of these Arab countries are allies with Israel. If he's going back over to Australia, that's where he's going to be stopping off at, is in Saudi Arabia. So he was disingenuous in what he was saying. And you can see that's why Tommy is supportive of him, is because he's anti-Islam. But he's certainly doesn't seem to be anti-immigration, anti-race mixing, anti-white genocide. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he is. But he didn't seem to be. And it's a shame that you can have what is essentially a nationalist demonstration, and instead of just having all British nationals there, they have to have a Jew there as well. And one thing you can't accuse Tommy Robinson of is being deceitful about this. I mean, he's never tried to hide this. He has always said that he is a Zionist, and you can understand why he would think that way. His stepfather, who adopted him, he was Jewish. And obviously he thinks a lot of his stepfather. So he has loyalties to Zionism. But I doubt whether even Tommy Robinson would support Jews running everybody else's country. I think what he means by Zionism is I support the state of Israel. I support the right of the Jews to have a country of their own. And if they have to fight off these Palestinians, they have to fight off these Palestinians. And I have to admit, I have similar sympathies. I mean, every country in the world, you had to fight a battle to secure the borders and make it your own country. The Americans did in America. They had to do the same in Australia. And the Israeli Jews are now doing the same over there in Palestine. It's just that it's happening in modern times, so it seems a bit shocking for everyone else. So this Jew spoke, and I think partially it's because he is a Jew that Tommy puts him up there, so he can say, look, I'm not a racist, I'm not an anti-Semite, I've got this Jewish friend. He didn't have any of his black friends on stage, but it's a big part of what Tommy does is to say that he's not a racist. And of course, when he had this documentary, that was partially the accusations that he was making against John Sweeney from Panorama, from the BBC. And I was a little bit worried that his documentary, that's what it was going to be about. Shock, horror. Someone from Panorama is anti-gay, says the odd racist thing, maybe an anti-Semitic thing, which is really, you know, we should rise above all of that rather than use it. Because it's the same terminology that gets thrown at us. It's rather like saying, we're not the real Nazis, we're not the real racists, you're the real racists. It's the same language. We can attack our enemies in better ways. And I'm happy to say he did go after his enemies in much, much better ways. There was a bit with Caelan Roberts that was absolutely scandalous. I really was not expecting to hear that somebody from Hope Not Hate had tried to rape Caelan Roberts, saying that's a very serious allegation. Tommy Robinson beeped out the name of the person that the allegation was made against, which was good of him. I'm glad that he did that. I think that was the right thing to do. And it's very brave of Caelan to come forward and say that, especially as there was nobody else there. It's just his word against Hope Not Hate. And apparently Hope Not Hate were trying to blackmail him. They were blackmailing him, saying they'll get the police involved, all sorts of things, saying that what he was doing was hate speech, and just really, really pressuring Caelan Robinson and others that had worked for Tommy Robinson to make things up about him. Make things up about him. One of the really shocking points was where John Sweeney said that he was talking to this blonde girl who was an ex-employee of Tommy Robinson's, and he could have made that clearer. It was just accepted that everybody would know that she was an ex-employee of his, and I didn't know that. I just sort of worked that out as we went through the documentary. But she was sitting with John Sweeney in the pub, and she said, well, I've got a recording of an argument with Tommy. It was actually an argument between him and some Muslim guy that she had recorded, I think. But she said, I've got a recording of this argument with Tommy. And John Sweeney assumed that she meant that it was an argument she had with him. And then he was saying, well, we can cut it to make it look sexual, to make it sound sexual. Meaning, they could cut it and make it look like Tommy Robinson had sexually assaulted this girl. They were going to try and me too him. I mean, this is really scandalous. Absolutely scandalous. And the BBC have refused to address this at all. They're still going on ahead with their Panorama documentary with the headline or the working title of Tommy Takedown. Even though he's just exposed their chief reporter, John Sweeney, as manufacturing fake news and saying that he was going to cut the audio to make it look like Tommy had sexually assaulted this girl. And it wasn't just that he was saying. He admitted that his greatest hero was the leader of the IRA. A leader of a terrorist group, and various other bits and pieces that he was saying that it was just too hard to actually pick out because there weren't any subtitles. Apparently, he was rude about the Irish. He was rude about homosexuals, but that's just by the by. That's just language that people use. Okay, it's good to show that the enforcers of political correctness themselves are hypocrites because they're not politically correct themselves. But as I say, that's not the things that we should really be using to try and attack our enemies with. We should be showing them up for being immoral, not for showing them up for being politically incorrect. The other target of the documentary was Hope Not Hate. And it's just fantastic to see somebody with the resources that Tommy Robinson has got to actually go after these people, because they have ruined so many people's lives with their lies. They basically go after anybody that is the right of center. And they exaggerate. They put in things which are completely untrue. I mean, they put in an article about us saying that, us here at Radio Aryan saying that Alex Davies was, applauding or glorifying some criminal damage at a school playing field, and that he was encouraging people to join this group. And in actual fact, when you listen to the podcast, he was saying he wasn't applauding this criminal damage. He was saying they actually did good posters. And then he said these posters are probably not even legal to be shown in public. So he was saying, don't put these posters up in public. He certainly wasn't applauding those sorts of posters if they've been put up. He wasn't aware of any criminal damage. And he certainly wasn't saying to people that they should join this group. He said that people should go and check out their page on Gab. And Hope Not Hate reported it, Alex was trying to get people to join this group. Just a load of lies, basically. The BBC went with that. Instead of checking the podcast for themselves, the BBC just repeated what Hope Not Hate had said. And then they said at the end of it, and all this has been given to the police to investigate Radio Aryan with. Well, the police will have investigated Radio Aryan and found that Hope Not Hate were lying. And the BBC. And the BBC should have checked to see whether what Hope Not Hate were saying was true. And of course they don't. They just regurgitate what Hope Not Hate tell them. The Daily Mail does the same. All the newspapers do the same. And Hope Not Hate they've even been caught exaggerating hate crime statistics after the European Union. They exaggerated the hate crime statistics by 3,000%. And this was exposed in The Spectator, I think it was. And again, that did not stop The Guardian, The Daily Mail, The BBC, all reporting these massively inflated hate crime statistics to say that after Brexit, that the racists and the haters had been emboldened after Brexit. Racists and haters weren't emboldened after Brexit. UKIP was at its lowest ebb. BNP is pretty much is no more. National Front are at their lowest ebb. Britain First were put in prison. You can hardly say that there was a big uprise in nationalists after Brexit. It was the opposite. People thought, well, we've done all that we need to do now. We voted to leave the EU. That's it. Rather like people in America voting for Donald Trump and thinking, well, that's it. That's all we need to do. We've got our man in office. We can go back to our daily lives. And of course, it's not enough just to do that. But Hope Not Hate had lied about that. They also boasted in this documentary, they boasted that they were directing Panorama, not John Sweeney, not the BBC, but they were in charge because they're embedded with the BBC. And apparently when the BBC were doing their interviews, they had Hope Not Hate there with them. They were telling the people they were interviewing what they had to say. This is the allegations that Caelan Roberts was making, and Lauren Southern. And they were saying that they were told they had to say this in response to the questions they were given, or there would be trouble, and the sort of trouble that would see them end up in prison. Those sorts of threats. And you could see when the girl, the undercover reporter, Tommy's undercover reporter, when she was in the pub with John Sweeney, he was saying, I'm going to ask you these questions and then you can reply this. He was scripted. He was telling her what she was supposed to say in her replies. And one of the funniest bits was at the end, at the beginning of the documentary, it shows you, Tommy makes this threatening text to her. And it supposedly comes from his phone, but it doesn't. It actually comes from a website. I forget the name of it. It was some kind of website that you can get to send out texts so that it appears as if it's come from somebody else's phone number. Apparently, it's quite easy to check whether you've been scammed like this as well, because they expected the BBC to check whether they had been scammed by this girl saying this was sent to me by Tommy Robinson. So it shows you that at the beginning. And then at the end, when Tommy does his gotcha moment with John Sweeney and turns the tables on him, because John Sweeney thought that Tommy Robinson was coming in to be told that Panorama had all this dirt on him. And in actual fact, Tommy was telling John Sweeney that he had all this dirt on him. And at the end of it, here's John Sweeney is waving this transcript of the text message that we know because we saw it that Tommy didn't actually send, and he's waving this as evidence of Tommy's violent nature. So it was all lots of funny points in it. Absolutely fantastic that he was able to show that actually outside the BBC offices. And a lot of people say, well, how can he do that? Well, it was a protest. We are legally allowed to protest in Britain. And if you've got the financial backing that he now has, thanks to all the contributions, if the police say, well, you need to have this, and this to hold your protest, he can do it. He's got the finances to do that. So he's able to have a protest outside the BBC Manchester offices and show this on a giant screen. The BBC manufacturing fake news, lying about the person they're doing a documentary about, targeting this person. They also showed you various other people that had their lives ruined by Hope Not Hate. Again, people that have done nothing wrong, nothing illegal, who've not been charged with any crime at all, that Hope Not Hate have then put on their website and said things about, exaggerated things, pointed out where they live, what they look like, so that they could then be targeted, so that they could then lose their jobs. Political blackmail, basically, blackmailing people into staying silent and intimidating people just because they have a different opinion, just because they have different ideas about things that Hope Not Hate can't stand to think that other people might think a little bit differently to them. The truth is, they know that they have no arguments. They cannot debate us. If they could debate us, that's what they would do. Most leftists say that. They say, well, the best way to deal with hate speech is to confront it and debate with them and show them how silly their ideas are. And most leftists think that that's what goes on. That isn't what goes on. These groups like Hope Not Hate, they find out where people live, find out who people are, they print the stuff up there, and then the Antifa all phone up the person's work and get them to lose their job, or they wait outside for them when they're on their way home from the pub so that they can beat them up. You know, violence occurs, hideous violence occurs when you look at Germany recently. The guy from Alternative for Deutschland who was seriously injured and put in critical condition in hospital by Antifa smashing him over the head with a weapon. And these organizations like Hope Not Hate, they exist everywhere. America's got the ADL, it's got the SPLC. And I don't understand how they can legally operate, how they can target people that have not committed any crime. And they work hand in hand with the mainstream media. And just recently we saw Grandpa Lampshade. Never committed any crime. Not got a criminal record. And he's front page news in the Huffington Post for his opinions. And they're telling everybody where he lives, where he works, what horrible opinions he has. It's all done to try and intimidate him into silence politically. And Tommy has done a fantastic thing by possibly he's put a stop to this. I mean, this could be the end of Hate Not Hope, or Hoping for Hate, as I like to call them. I hope it's the end of them. I hope they can't come back from this, because their credibility is absolutely shredded. I mean, they've been accused of rape. They've been accused of blackmail. And when Tommy was telling them all this, that this was all on film, and these witnesses were saying this, their heads were in their hands. Their heads were in their hands. Anyway, we've gone a little bit over halfway here, so I think it's time for a bit of a music break. This is, I think this is just one guy, one musician, and he goes by the name of Xenocide. You can find him on SoundCloud, and this is a track of his entitled Forgotten Souls. And I'll be back in a few minutes. Okay, welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that bit of progressive national socialist black metal there by Xenocide. As I said, you can check him out over at SoundCloud. Getting back to Hope Not Hate and this documentary. Hope Not Hate's response to this has not been to answer any of the allegations that were made about them. They haven't tried to say what was really going on or answered anything at all. All they've done is come back with, we've got all this evidence of Tommy being violent. We've got all this evidence of him saying nasty things. And it's all going to go up on Panorama. As if this documentary hasn't happened. As if tens of thousands of people, probably hundreds of thousands of people around the world, as if they weren't actually watching this documentary yesterday as it was being shown on the side of the BBC Manchester Centre. And the BBC themselves, they've said they're going to continue to investigate Tommy Robinson. They're not going to investigate Panorama. They're not going to investigate John Sweeney. They're going to continue to investigate Tommy Robinson. And then in the time-honoured fashion of our enemies crying out in pain whilst they strike us, they said they're not going to bow to threats and intimidation. And this is the way these people operate. You expose them for their crimes, and then they respond to that by claiming that you are threatening them or you are intimidating them. And this happens when you expose the lies about World War II, when you expose the lies about the gas chambers. You get accused of threatening the Jews somehow, inciting hatred against the Jews, when all you're doing is pointing out that the Germans should not be carrying around this great weight of guilt upon their shoulders for something that didn't happen. People aren't threatening the Jews by saying that. They're trying to help the Germans by pointing this out, and also help the rest of the white race who feel guilty for that, who feel guilty that we could do such a terrible, nasty thing. And in actual fact, we did something even worse. We blamed our own people for doing a crime that never happened, a hideous crime. So it's even worse. And this is the tactics that the enemy uses. They will cry out in pain as if they're the aggrieved party, they're the victim in this, whilst victimizing somebody else, whilst victimizing Tommy Robinson, whilst making a documentary that is specifically just being made so that they can discredit him, target him, slander him, and try to squash the massive amounts of public support that he has. Another good news article last week that was actually relevant to this was about Jacob Rees-Mogg. Apparently, Jacob Rees-Mogg said in one of his podcasts that if Britain doesn't leave the EU, and if Britain has to take part in the European elections, then be prepared for Tommy Robinson to win outright, win the majority outright. And so far, Jacob Rees-Mogg is the only politician that I've heard that has estimated accurately the support that Tommy Robinson has in Britain. All the rest of them will just speak badly about him, say that he doesn't have any support. And Jacob Rees-Mogg wasn't saying good things about Tommy Robinson, but he was saying he does have this support. If Britain doesn't leave the EU and we have an EU election, there will be a massive protest vote. And the protest vote will go to Tommy Robinson if he stands. Because with the European elections, it's not like the parliamentary elections. It's not like, we all know that the people that get voted into the European Union, they don't actually have any power. They can't actually make any changes. But it is a good way of showing your disgust with the current government by not voting for any of the main parties. So if we don't leave the European Union and Tommy does stand as an independent candidate for an EU MP, I think he would absolutely smash it. And Jacob Rees-Mogg has called this right. And it's good of him to be honest. This is what I was saying earlier in the program when I was talking about Paul Golding's speech about we do have some politicians who occasionally are honest and occasionally they do good things. Jacob Rees-Mogg is one of them, and that's one of the things that he's done. He's talk about Tommy like that. Well, we'll just have to wait and see if the BBC continue to air their documentary now that it's completely discredited. I think they're trying to portray it as if Tommy got frightened that he was going to be exposed, so he's just made all of this up. But how can he have made it up when it's all recorded by an undercover reporter, and you've got these witnesses that are saying these things, that are saying these things happened? Hope Not Hate are also trying to say that Caelan Robinson retracted his witness statement that he was sexually assaulted in his hotel room by a Hope Not Hate member. And if he had retracted it, then I doubt whether Tommy would have shown it if he had retracted it. And if he has tried to retract it, doesn't that show that he's been pressured to do so, blackmailed to do so by Hope Not Hate? Perhaps that's what's happened. But don't forget, Tommy bleeped out the name of the person that is alleged to have done this. So the allegation, it's not an allegation about an actual individual. So maybe that's what was done. Because Caelan Robertson maybe said, I don't want the person's name to go out there. I mean, you can imagine the guy is probably very frightened of reprisals from Hope Not Hate for doing this. It's very brave of him to come forward and to say that and to say these things were happening. Because don't forget, the guy was being threatened with prison. He wasn't just being threatened with heavies and being targeted. He was being threatened with the force of the law. And we know that Hope Not Hate work with the police and with the government. It's the Hope Not Hate quote unquote specialists on the far right that speak in these court cases. These people that don't actually study the far right in any unbiased way, but basically just write lies and slander about it, and they go into the court and claim to be experts. The sort of things that they put into their reports, I think a lot of it they get from informers. And obviously, if these informers, they can say whatever they like about whoever the target is, because the target will usually be some member of public who's saying things on Twitter or on Facebook, and they don't actually have the clout to rebut what's actually being said about them. So these informers can tell Hope Not Hate all sorts of nonsense about people involved in the nationalist scene, and Hope Not Hate will print it, and the public will read that, the newspapers will copy it, and the people that these lies have been said about, they've got nowhere that they can put these lies right and say the truth about what happened. And the informers, they've got an incentive to do this, because the more nonsense that they feed to Hope Not Hate, the more money they get paid. So it's a bit of a vicious circle there. I think David Cameron once had something to do with it. He was a sponsor of this Hope Not Hate group, and they came out of Searchlight again, which was an anti-nationalist, pro-communist organization. And they used to go after the BNP, and then they changed and they went after UKIP. Now they go after just anybody that has a blog online, basically. I think they didn't include Radio Aryan in their state of hate this year, probably because including us would be an admission of failure, really, because they've tried to expose us before, and they told lies about us before. And each time we do get put in the newspapers, in the mainstream media, our listenership doubles. The last time we were put in the Daily Mail, only one comment out of 16 was a negative comment. All the others were positive about us. And I think we have a positive radio station here at Radio Erin. We've got articulate hosts that passionately believe in what they're doing, that know what they are talking about, And I don't think Hope Not Hate want members of the public listening to us, because they know that if people do, they're going to be more likely to sympathise with us than they are with Hope Not Hate. So I think that's why we're not in their State of Hate report this year. Anyway, I'm hoping we've got enough time here to cover another news story that I wanted to today. And this is about the white man that was turned down for a job in the police, who has now won his case for anti-white racism. The son of a police chief who tried to join his father's force was rejected for being a white, heterosexual male without disability. And that's incredible, isn't it? Because he wasn't disabled, the police have no use for him. What use could a disabled man be in the police force? Maybe they could work in the offices, I guess. But they couldn't really call themselves a policeman. You can't be a bobby on the beat if you're in a wheelchair. And this is just how ridiculous things have become here in Britain, with equality and diversity quotas. And instead of having people, the best person being picked for the job, we're being told, well, no, you can't have this job because you're white, because you're heterosexual, because you're male, and you've got a disability. Obviously, they want black lesbians in wheelchairs to join the police, because, of course, they're going to do the best job of chasing down criminals, aren't they? And it's just so ridiculous. And I would have expected his case to be thrown out of court, because things are so anti-white nowadays in Britain. But it wasn't. This guy won. This is fantastic news that he won. Matthew Furlong, 25, had applied for his dream job as a constable with Cheshire Police, where his father, Liam, 52, is a detective inspector. Think about that. The job was as a constable. As a constable. Constable on patrol, a cop, a guy that pounds the beat, that walks the beat, a constable. And they wanted somebody with a disability to do the job. I mean, what if somebody who was mentally retarded had turned up? Would they have got the job? He performed well in tests and at interview, but the force was so desperate for more recruits from ethnic minorities or who were gay or transgender that it refused to hire him. See, these are the qualifications you need now in modern day Britain to get a job. You need to be gay, transgender, or an ethnic minority. How can that have happened in our country if the government that we elect, who is supposed to be there to provide prosperity for us, to provide chances for us to grow, to educate us, to protect us, to do what's best for us? How can that government be doing what's best for us, for the majority, if they're saying, well, you can't get a job unless you're a foreigner, unless you're sexually deviant, or unless you've mutilated yourself and chopped your private parts off? Madness. Mr. Furlong, who has a degree in particle physics from Lancaster University, lodged a discrimination claim against Cheshire Police under equality legislation and won. I mean, you could make a case that perhaps he was overqualified here. Perhaps he may have got bored in the job because he's got a super brain. Obviously, he's a bit of a genius. He has a degree in particle physics. But they said, no, he's actually right. This was anti-white racism. It is believed to be the first successful case of its kind. Well, let's hope that there are plenty more and that this sets a precedent. In a ruling last week, a judge criticised the force for treating candidates with protected characteristics, including those who are gay, transgender, disabled, black, or from other ethnic minorities, more favourably than Mr. Furlong, who is a white, heterosexual male without disability. And this idea of protected characteristics, that some members of society are worth more than others, that's what that means. It means going back to the days of Virgild in Anglo-Saxon times, when a priest was worth more than a peasant, and a peasant was worth more than a thrall, and you had a different amount of money paid out for the same injuries that happened to different people, that happened to different classes. We used to be a class-based system in Britain, and now we're a minority-based system. Minorities are worth more than the people themselves. Ethnic minorities have more value than white British natives. Again, this proves that either our government has become occupied by a foreign power, or all the people in government are traitors. Mr. Furlong of Frodsham, Cheshire, declined to comment, but his father said, "I've tried not to get involved. It is such a political hot potato." I bet he tried not to get involved, because he could have lost his job for speaking up for him, for speaking up for a white man, and not agreeing with diversity quotas in the police. He said the chief constable is big on diversity, which is quite right, but it has to be applied within the letter of the law, and they didn't do that. The case came as the leader of Britain's police chiefs called yesterday for radical laws to allow police to positively discriminate in favour of ethnic minority candidates. And we can offer a translation of that. The police chiefs are calling for laws to allow them to be racist against whites. That's what positive discrimination means, racism against whites. They want to legalise this. The force started holding recruitment and advertising days at gay pride events, faith centres and Sikh temples. It also appointed a lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender positive action advisor to drive recruitment on social media. The force's then acting chief constable, Janet McCormick, who now works at the College of Policing, believed passionately about positive action and a diverse police force, the tribunal was told. Why doesn't she believe passionately in solving crimes? Why doesn't she believe passionately in having the best police force that she can? Crime solving is at a rate of 5% in Britain at the moment. How do they think having more disabled blacks and transgenders in the police is going to improve that? It's not going to improve that. The only thing that's going to improve that is having better quality police doing the job, which means giving them very, very harsh tests and only picking the people that get the very highest marks in the tests. And as we'll hear here, well, just wait till you hear what they did here instead of picking those who got the highest marks. Judge Claire Grundy noted she is clearly a trailblazer who feels strongly that the force requires some significant change. Although office numbers from minority groups rose by 2017, the plan was having only a small effect. So she obviously thought she would try to increase this by just accepting every black candidate that turned up, basically. Mr. Furlong was among about 675 candidates who applied to join Cheshire Police in September 2017 and was shortlisted a month later. He passed challenging tests and was invited for an interview, along with 182 others, in November. Although the interview went well, with an inspector on the panel telling Mr. Furlong he had been refreshingly well prepared, I bet he was well prepared. His father was a detective. He had a degree in physics, but he was rejected 6 days later. He was among 34 white male non-disabled candidates who were unsuccessful. But all the black candidates were offered roles. All of them, every single one of the blacks, was offered a job in the police. In feedback, Mr. Furlong was told there were not enough vacancies for all the 127 candidates who had passed the interview stage. But Judge Grundy found the force had set the interview pass threshold artificially low, and candidates were awarded a simple pass or fail, which meant substantial numbers were deemed equal, when in reality, some were much better than others. And this is just it. This is what happens with all of these diversity quotas. They have to lower the bar. They have to lower the standards that are required for people to get the job so that they can get more blacks in some cases, so that they can get more women in. I mean, you'd have to put it really, really low to start getting in mentally disabled people, but that's where we're headed. That's where we're going. So they lowered the interview pass threshold, and not just that, just so long as somebody actually passed, that was good enough. So instead of saying, well, let's get everybody that got 98% or above 90%, we'll give them the job. They said, oh, no, we'll just equalize them all. We'll make them all equal if they pass or if they fail. So once again, equality has come in here, regardless of the standards. The force did this so that it could appoint officers from minority groups ahead of the best scoring people, the judge said. So obviously the best scoring people, surprise, surprise, white males. I mean, that's what it says here. This was done so they could appoint officers from minority groups ahead of the best scoring people. And no whites were offered any jobs. So clearly it was the whites who were the best scoring people. She concluded that Mr. Furlong, who now works as an analyst for an energy company, would have been offered a position had the force not applied positive action. And so he had been discriminated against. Racism, basically. And they use these flowery words to describe it, positive action, but it's anti-white racism, that's all it is. His lawyer, Jennifer Ainscough, said he was denied his dream job simply for being a white, heterosexual male. And that just shows you this anti-white hatred that is there in our society. Good on this lawyer for calling a spade and saying exactly what it is. He wasn't allowed the job because he was a white heterosexual male. She added, positive action must be applied lawfully to ensure the highest caliber of candidates are recruited, regardless of race, gender, or sexual orientation. The force may be ordered to pay Mr. Furlong damages at a remedy hearing set for a later date. Cheshire Police said that it would review the findings. And this is fantastic. This is so good. This means that anybody else that goes for a job in places that are advertising for only non-whites and homosexuals and transsexuals, if you go for that job and you are very well qualified and you then don't get it, do take them to court. Make sure you take them to court, because it's not legal for them to be racist against white people. They're not allowed to discriminate against us. They do have to take the best people for the job. And if there aren't enough best blacks for the job, then they shouldn't be employing the blacks. They should be employing the whites. They have to work harder at educating the blacks to get them up to a higher standard, not lower the standards like they did here and then just kick all the white people out from the job interview. They're not allowed to do that. That's what is so good about this. And of course, we know that you can't get the blacks to be any better than they are, because their average IQ is 30 points lower than ours. But at least it means we now have a remedy. This can be taken to court, and we can win. Okay, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back next week with more Aryan Britannia for you. Don't forget that we do require donations, and we do have a Bitcoin wallet. That helps to keep Radio Aryan going. And of course, I do hope you all have a great week ahead of you in the spring sunshine. See you next week.
You are listening to Radio Aryan. For an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.